download from Triple J.
For more music, current affairs, comedy and culture, triplej.net.au.
And now...
Triple J.
Triple J.
Triple J.
Triple J Mornings with Zan.
Oh, it's weird because to make good music you have to use a lot of personal stuff. Yeah, and it's weird for some guys from the north of England who don't really like... We don't even talk to each other about stuff like that. So the only way you can really express it is through the song. That's kind of it. And then we all go through stuff and it's weird that we don't like talking about it. And I wouldn't really want to talk about stuff in an interview. But then we kind of bare our soul to the world by writing new songs that don't leave much to the imagination about what we're feeling.
Do you think that you've got a propensity to share more because of that? Because you're kind of keeping it contained in everyday life?
Well, yeah, I mean, when people go to therapy, they often tell them to write poems, don't they?
Mm.
It's one of those, not that I'd know, I've never been to therapy, but I don't need to because I've got a rock and roll band.
That's true. Starts with nothing. It's a different kind of energy, but do you still think there can be an energy and a life to the kind of darkness that you guys have explored on this record?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I might be totally wrong, and I usually am wrong. I mean, you know, just because I'm the singer of the band doesn't mean I'm the kind of oracle on what we're doing or why we're doing it, because sometimes we're just doing stuff because it feels right, and there's no kind of discussion of where it's going. It just goes that way because we let it lead us the way we're going, but... Maybe I hate hearing bands saying they're getting mature because it just sounds like getting boring.
Yeah.
And I think we've kind of matured, but it doesn't mean getting boring. I think it just means getting maybe a little bit more sinister and a bit less self-conscious about worrying what people would think about us writing about certain things, or worrying about what our fans might think, or worrying about what people expect from the Kaiser Chiefs. And we've just made a record which we really wanted to make and let it go where it was taking us. Obviously, there was the way we released it, which was important in actually getting us started. I don't think we would have made a record if it wasn't for the idea. And because we were never really thinking about this album as a flowing thing, it was track by track, it just let us go down these roads where we'd have a song, and if it was sounding a certain way, we'd give it more to make it sound that way. Not, we wouldn't hold back and think, oh, how's this going to fit?
You mentioned the way that you guys offered it, I guess, initially to fans, giving them 20 songs to then craft their own record in whatever sequence they like. Given that you did that and offered it up as a collection of songs as opposed to your own choice of where things were going to fall and how long or short the album would be, do you see this record as an artistic statement, or is it more of a collection of songs that stand alone and that ones that you just like?
The thing is, it's weird because you can ask me this question and ask Nick and you get two different answers. I mean, I heard him in an interview the other day saying that for him, it's all about this physical release that's out there. That's, for him, the album. But for me, it's different. So for me, it wasn't really an artistic statement doing anything. It was more of a statement. And it was about, so many people moan about something has to change within the music industry. Things can't go on the way they're going. People aren't buying records, but if they are, they're buying Adele. What we did was, instead of moaning about it, we've done something. And I think that what we've been recognised for, whether people like the idea or hate the idea or like the countries that don't like the idea, at least we're not just talking about it, we're doing it. We're going out there and we did this thing, we had the idea, we saw it through, we made it happen. And I'm really proud of that, because how many drunken conversations you had where you had the most amazing idea and the next day you kind of like think, oh, this might go wrong, that might go... You're never really brave enough to see it through, but... We saw it through. So that's what I'm most proud of. I'm proud of the fact that we actually made it happen. I don't want much. I'm happy with what I've got on the second floor. I pass a ruffian on the stair. But what the driver saw, I threw the letterbox at number 4. I don't have much. It will be deafening when I do.
You guys got on board two of the world's biggest producers in Tony Visconti and Ethan Johns, as well as production by Nick, as you mentioned. Why so many cooks on this record? Why so many producers?
Well, it was kind of, we were working away and we were having really good fun, and we wanted to take it out of the studio and but have different experiences, because you can do that now. And in the past, you get a producer, you work with them from beginning to end and over a set period of time, but we didn't really have a set period of time. And we had different songs that were totally different beasts, in a way. And there were songs that we were playing in rehearsal rooms and saying, we just want this racket that we make to be on the record. You know, that's what we want. And that's why you go to someone like Ethan Johns, because that's exactly what he does. He records bands live, and even the backing vocals were done live. Nick was singing while playing drums. It was like, we've never done that before. And I was in the room. No one had headphones on it. We were just making music. It was brilliant. But then there's other songs that you couldn't do it, because songs like Heard It Break, which Nick produced, it's all like electronic drums and loops. It's a lot more homemade. So, you know, he had to do that in Nick's studio and build it that way. Nick was listening to like a lot of kind of Visconti produced stuff, and he was saying, I really like this drum sound. I'm going to try and find out how you get that drum sound. And then, you know, you suddenly realise that if you want to get a drum sound like Tony Visconti's produced it, then you get Tony Visconti to produce it. So we did that, and we did like, I think six tracks from him, and that was great. And that was really quick as well. We recorded like eight tracks in 5 days with Visconti, but we were in for 3 weeks with him, and I think most of the time we just spent asking him questions about David Bowie.
As you would.
It's worth it just for that. I mean, if you're a massive David Bowie fan, I think if you could save enough money just to get Visconti to produce you. He turns up, he says, have you got any songs? You go, no, but I really want to know what sandwich David Bowie would like.